Hello, everybody. Welcome back. We're ready to move on to the next stage in this exciting series. And in order to do so, we have to briefly review what we've discussed so far. So far, we've discussed the categories and topics of triage and choosing whose life to save. But the next stage of this series is not discussing whether you can save someone over someone else, but whether you can sacrifice or even kill someone in order to save someone else or potentially to save the many. So we're really going to end up questioning whether you can ever kill one person in order to save the many. And we're also going to have a slight change in style, because moving forward, it's going to be a little less interactive so that we can cover more ground. So let's review the case that we mentioned a few shiurim ago, which is the case of self-driving cars. Because self-driving cars are now a revolutionary but also potentially problematic technological innovation of the modern era. Because they may eventually become the future of daily travel, but they've also become the center of much controversy, as the engineers who are charged with programming these cars are faced with a moral dilemma, which is as follows. If a self-driving car is heading towards a collision, the car has to choose whether to move forward or to turn to the side. So it's obviously going to turn to the side, because it's going to try to avoid as much, you know, damage as possible. But what if the driving car is careening towards a mass of people and it can turn to the side to avoid them, but by doing so, it's going to run over an innocent bystander who's on the side? So from the engineering stage, the car has to be programmed to choose a certain course of action. So which algorithm are they going to choose? And this modern quandary has brought new life to the age-old moral dilemma referred to as the trolley problem. And the trolley problem goes as follows. A man is strolling alongside a railroad track, and he suddenly sees a runaway train careening towards the track. And at closer glance, he realizes that the conductor has passed out at the wheel, leaving the train completely out of control. And even more appalling is the sight of five workers tied down to the tracks directly in front of the speeding train. And if the train remains on course and this man remains still, these five workers are going to definitely die. But luckily, he's staying next to a lever that can divert the runaway train down a sidetrack shortly before it will hit these innocent workers. But there's a catch, because on this side route is a single worker, and he's also tied down to the tracks. So he's going to die if you send the train his way. So what should you do? If you were this man, what would you do? Can you sacrifice this one worker to save the five? Or perhaps you're even morally required to do so, halachically required to do so. So the question is, maybe it's even usher to do this, because how can you play God? How can you choose who lives and who dies? Maybe you should be passive. And like contemporary researchers have showed that most people think that you are at least allowed to pull the lever. But we're going to have to discuss this from a halachic standpoint. What's the halachic perspective? And there's also a little bit of a nuanced case where instead of there being five workers on one track and one worker on another track, you have five workers on the only track and the train is still careening towards them, but you're on the footbridge and you're on this bridge which kind of goes over this track, and there's a big man, and the classic case is called the fat man. It's this oversized man who's leaning over the side of this bridge, and you can push him over. And by pushing him over, you can, you know, get him to go right on this track, and the train will hit into him. In the same way, it's going to sacrifice him, but his, you know, his girth, the fact that he's so big, is going to stop the train, and it won't end up hitting these five innocent workers. So the question is this case any different than the classical original trolley case? So people are much more hesitant to push the fat man over the bridge than they are to pull the lever. Like, most people who are willing to pull the lever are still more hesitant to push the fat man. There's some people who won't do both. There's some people who will do both. But there are a lot of people who are willing to pull the lever but not push the fat man. And we're going to have to talk about this down the line. But one option is more direct. You're pushing the fat man, just pulling a lever. Also, there's an emotional component. You're physically involved and attached to a sense of murdering someone versus just diverting the weapon, diverting the train itself. And there's also the question of perhaps when it comes to the fat man, you need the fat man to like get knocked by the train in order to save the five people. But when it comes to, let's say, the original trolley case, you don't need the single worker to die. As a matter of fact, if he was able to get out of his ropes and move to the side, you'd be happy. But if the fat man fell on the tracks and moved over, you wouldn't be happy, because then that would defeat the whole purpose, and the five workers would end up dying. So Philippa Foot was the one who originally popularized this trolley case, this trolleyology. And ever since she did, it's really just taken on life of its own. So the question of sacrificing the few to save the many was always this compelling ethical and philosophical question. But the big problem everyone always had is that's not so practical. Like, this trolley case is a great philosophical question, but that's great for the philosophy department. Where is it going to be practical for real-life situations? Especially because in real life, people make split-second decisions. So even if you have a halacha conclusion, it's hard to expect people to really come to this thought-out conclusion of what's the proper halachic choice when you're really put on the spot. Like, right, when you're under pressure, people act instinctively without using their intellect. At least that's what often happens. So the real revolutionary aspect of self-driving cars is the fact that now at the design stage, manufacturers have to make a deliberate decision regarding this dilemma. So unlike the snap decision required when it comes to the bystander of the real-life trolley problem, this team of designers, programmers, ethicists, engineers, they're designing the self-driving car from the design stage. And they're basically going to be able to make this decision. And whatever they decide is going to be the algorithm with which the vehicle constantly is programmed to do. So it's really now very practical, because it's going to, this machine, whatever they program it to do, the car is going to make the same calculated decision every time this issue arises. So in the near future, the trolley problem will no longer be a theoretical question in the realm of philosophy, but it's going to take place in the actual streets on a regular basis. So now the question really becomes very practical. What's the correct course of action? What should these cars be programmed to do? So let's try to analyze this from a deeper and from a Jewish perspective. But before we do this, we have to lay the groundwork, and we're going to kind of touch upon things that we've already discussed previously, but just we're going to do it briefly. It's really important to build this foundation properly. The first aspect is that this is, like, when it comes to murder, just fascinating. Everyone agrees murder is wrong, from, you know, all ethnicities, all geographical locations, no matter what realm of life or what background you have, everyone agrees that murder is wrong. And halacha isn't really coming to teach you basic morality, because that's something really deep within the human essence, within the Selma Lakim, within, we talked about this before, there's a lot of, there are nuances and there are qualifications, but generally, the Shev Mitzvah Noach, the basic foundations of being a good human being, that's not Jewish, that's human. But halacha is, and without getting into the complexities, it's like a much more fine-tuned, nuanced system and a much more idealistic system of life. So it's not as simple, and it requires much more. It's a life of aspiration, obligation, and purpose, or at least a higher purpose, and it requires a lot more of you. And put very simply, the real where you see this come into practice is the fact that halacha is not going to tell you that stealing is wrong and that murder is wrong. Look, you know that already. The real gift of halacha is, what about when you have conflicting values? And that's really what medical ethics, Jewish medical ethics, is about. What about when you have conflicting issues? Like, for example, everyone will agree murder is wrong, but what if you have to murder one person to save 100? So saving people is obviously good, and murdering people is obviously wrong, but what about when they conflict? Or stealing is wrong, and saving people is great, but what about when the only way you can save someone is to steal? So that's really the beauty of our halachic and lamdish discussions, is finding when not only the principles and concepts of Judaism, but when concepts and values contradict and conflict, how do you solve these issues? So, and it's also really important, because there's so much confusion when it comes to all of the discussions we're going to have. I want to just lay out the categories very simply. Because number one is murder itself. You're not allowed to murder. Then the next question is whether you're ever allowed to murder to save your life. And the next question is if you're ever allowed to murder to save someone else's life. So that's a distinction between saving your life versus saving someone else's life. Because remember, Chayecha Kodman, something we discussed before, that doesn't really apply to someone else's life. So we have to think if that value of Chayecha Kodman ever really applies in this case. And number four is whether you're ever allowed to murder one person to save the many. And this is the next stage. The next stage is also where people really miss the nuance, is that even within the question of murdering one to save the many, there's another category, which is, are you ever allowed to murder someone to save the many if everyone is going to die regardless? Meaning, there's two aspects. One is murdering one person to save the many. The other is murdering one person to save the many when that person who you're going to sacrifice or kill is not an innocent bystander, but he's actually in danger himself. And, for example, in trolley case, that's sacrificing one to save the many. The single worker is not in danger. But let's say the classic 9/11 case where you were going to shoot down the plane, and we'll get to this hopefully in the future, but you're going to shoot down a plane full of people who are on their way to die anyways, and you're just going to kill them to save all the people that the plane was who was hijacked by the terrorists. That plane was going to knock into the Pentagon and kill so many more people. Would you be allowed to kill people who are going to die anyways in order to save more people who are going to be in danger? And that gets into questions of Rodef, gets into questions of Chayisha, in terms of the fact that you're still, it's true that they're gonna die, but you're gonna quicken their death, you're gonna hasten their death. So we're gonna get to that. That's gonna be a very important discussion down the line. And there's a bunch of other issues also, which we'll get into questions of Rodef, etc. So let's take a step back now and let's really think about this from like point one. What would be the first foundational principle that you want to talk about when it comes to are you allowed to ever sacrifice someone to save someone else? Is the nature of Ritzicha, the nature of murder, the prohibition, the Isser of murder, and something which we've once again talked about. The Torah clearly says that it's Usser to kill, and it's one of the worst offenses in Judaism. And the principle behind this is so simple. You're removing someone's neshama from the world. You're limiting his or her ability to exist in the world and to live out his or her life. And it's not surprising that this is one of the harshest isurim and has one of the harshest onshim, one of the harshest punishments. And the question that we're going to have to really think about is, to what extent does this prohibition of murder apply? In other words, under what circumstances, if ever, would you be permitted to murder? What if by murdering one person, you save another? What if by murdering one person's life, you save your own life? What if by murdering one person's life, you save 20, 100, 200, 100,000, all of Klal Yisrael? When is the prohibition of murder ever allowed? And just to really, we talked a little bit about the philosophical issues behind this. Just to put it very blankly, when you, we'll just do it very briefly, but when you kill someone, when you remove their neshama from the world, you're taking away their potential ability to grow, accomplish, and become the person they were meant to become. And just to give you a beautiful, deep idea, the two luchos are always paralleled, as in you have 10, sorry, so you have the Seres HaDibros, the 10 Dibros, and those 10 are split up into two groups, five and five. And there's so much deep Torah on this, we're not going to really get into it, but on the very simple level, the ones on the right always parallel the ones on the left. And I can show you how all of them apply, but just to show you the first one, is that the first Dibra on the right is Anochi Hashem Elokeichem, I am Hashem, your God. And the first one on the left is Ritzicha, you shouldn't murder. And what's the parallel between the two? It's that Hashem is the source of all life. Hashem is the source of the world. And Hashem is the Anochi, the great I. Hashem is the source of existence. And Hashem is the neshama shel neshama, says Nefesh HaChaim, says he's the neshama of all neshamas, the source of all neshamas, the source of all life. But when you don't see your fellow person as also having a chilek al kamimah, as having a neshama, as being godly, as being someone that has tremendous potential and spiritual value, and you only see him as a piece of flesh, that's the only way you can kill them. So, but when you do kill them, you do something horrible. And that's why you are chayiv misa when you kill someone. Midi k'nagi midi. You remove their neshama from the world, you get your neshama removed. Now, there is a, you know, a famous philosophical question, which we did discuss before, which is, like, if someone was able to die, meaning if you were able to kill someone, didn't Hashem want this person to die? Because how else would you have been able to kill him? Meaning, nothing happens without Hashem wanting it to happen. And, you know, everything's hashkacha. So, in essence, how can we ever say that you're such a bad person, you're a Rashi Chai Misa for killing someone? Aren't you doing what Hashem wants? And he has the same question, really, this is the famous question of, like, all interference with Hashem's plans. How can a doctor interfere with Hashem's plans? A person's sick because Hashem wants him to be sick. How can a doctor interfere? So that's the famous Repo Yerepe, according to Moshe Rishonim, is permission not for the doctor to intervene, but the fact that the doctor is a shliach from Hashem, really doing Hashem's will, and that Hashem sent them the, you know, the sickness as a wake-up call, as an onesh, as a way to, you know, whatever the reason was. And the doctor is the shliach that the... We'll actually talk about this down the line, whether you're ever, I mean, there's a famous debate whether you're allowed to go to a doctor, whether it's asr to go to a doctor, whether it's mutter, whether it's chiyav, and also the famous Ramban who says that really you're not supposed to go to a doctor, and whether, you know, what did he mean? What was he talking about? Was he talking about in a different historical time period? What does he really mean? There's also a question whether doctors are allowed to heal. Whether they're allowed to, chayev to heal. So is Rapoyer pay a hector? Is it a chiev? These are all really important questions. But how can, to get back to our original question, how can you really interfere with Hashem's plan? And assuming that you can't, that means that when you killed this person, if you killed the person, that was Hashem's ratzon, that was Hashem's will. So one of the famous answers to this, given by some of the Rishonim, also I think Rav Sadigun says it, is that the only way someone can kill someone else is if that person is Chayiv Misa. Meaning, that person is Chayiv Misa, he's going to die regardless, and Hashem has endless ways upon which he could actually get this person to be killed, but you chose to be the way that Hashem killed him, and therefore you have accepted upon yourself the, you know, to be that shliach, but now you're also responsible. Meaning it was going to happen regardless, and you became the shliach. That's one option that really says that everything that happens is all always hashkacha, and that your free will, human free will, can never override that. And there's another option, which is that he wasn't chayiv misa, meaning the person you killed wasn't chayiv misa, but you have free will. And therefore, you can kill someone even if it wasn't Chayiv Misa. Doesn't that mean that you live in a very tyrannical, like, unsafe world? You can walk around that anyone can kill anyone. So the common approach, the common answer, the synthesis between the two is that, no, if you're Chayiv Misa, then Hashem will let it happen. If you're not Chayiv Misa, then your free will now goes against this person's life. And in such a case, you have free will, but Hashem has Hashkacha. So you can try to kill him, but Hashem will decide whether or not you deserve for Hashem to interfere and save you. If you're on the level where you don't, not only do you, are you not Chayiv Misa, but you also deserve to be saved, then Hashem will protect you. If you don't deserve that, then that really is the hashkacha that Hashem is not going to, like, in that case, you don't deserve for to be saved. It's a very complex topic, it's a very interesting topic, but we're not going to really go too much into it right now. But in essence, this also gets into the fact that whenever you lose your life, just getting into the media connected media aspect of it, what's the onesh for killing someone? You lose your place in the world. You removed his neshama from the world, and then you get your neshama removed from the world. What if you killed someone b'shogeg, by accident? So you made him lose his place in the world. It was an accident, so it's not as severe, it's not as chamor, it's not as strict, but at the same time, you still do lose your physical place in the world. And you need to go to Galus, to an Ari Miklat, where you go to a different makam. You removed him from this makam, and now you get removed from makam. And that's really all the very deep concept. We're not going to talk too much about this now, but this is why when Adam HaRishon originally sinned, Kabbalistically, he killed an aspect of himself. And he also removed Hashem from the world. The whole world fell. So what was the Mida K'nei Mida? He lost his makam. He had to leave Gan Eden. When Cain killed Hevel, what was his onesh? He went into eternal Golus. He was a constant wanderer. Now, you can say, oh, that was amazing. And you can argue that, you know, he didn't even know what he was doing. He didn't know how to kill someone. It never been done. So it was, to an extent, you can say it was an element of Shogeg. When Klai Yisrael sinned and when it came to the Golos of Beit Rishon, Beit Sheni, so some of the deeper thinkers say that what was going on? Why would we go into Golos? Because the Gemara talks about the Shechina leaving the world. The Shechina is Hashem manifesting and expressing himself in the world. When we sinned, the Shechina left the world. What happened? In essence, we killed the world. Because the world, the Hashem is the Neshama of the world. Now, when we sinned, the Neshama left the world. Not fully, but to an extent. What's the Midi Kneged Mida? We killed Hashem. We killed the world. We didn't kill Hashem, but we killed Hashem's manifestation in the world. The Shechina left because we sinned. And what was the Mida Kneged Mida? We lost our Malkum. We left Eretz Yisrael. So this is obviously a very deep topic, very interesting topic, but we're not going to go right into the main parts of this really fascinating topic, which is that not only is it usur to murder, but what if you have a case where the only way you can save your own life is if you murder someone? Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Ayin Dalet Amin Aleph, it brings down the famous question, Rotseach Gufa Min Halan. How do you know that you're not allowed to kill someone? How do you know you're not allowed to kill someone even to save your own life? So the Gemara is talking about the big three Aviros. The big three Aviros come up in Pesachim, Daf Chaf Hei, and Yoma, Daf Pei Beis, and in Sanhedrin, Daf Ayin Dalet. And the big three, as we know, are killing, adultery, and Gilui Raos, adulterous relationships. So the question of the Gemara is, where do we know, and the Gemara brings sources for why you're not allowed to serve Ozor, save your life. The Gemara brings a source for why you're not allowed to do Gilui Raos to save your life, Raos. And now the Gemara says, how do you know that you're not allowed to kill someone in order to save your own life? And the Gemara says, Svarahu. It's logical. And it brings a story of a person who goes over to Rabbah and says that the Reish Gelusa, this, you know, the, not the Reish Gelusa, but this, you know, the head person of my town, whatever, said that if you don't kill someone, I'm going to kill you. So what does Rabbah say back to him? Rabbah says back to him that you have to be killed and you cannot kill this person because, which in essence means that who says your blood's redder? And we're going to have to really say, what does that mean? Who says your blood's redder? What is Rabbah even talking about? But on the simplest level, it means that you cannot kill someone else because who says you're better than him? So seemingly, we now know that you're not allowed to kill someone or save someone else. But the question that we're going to have to ask is why? Why can't you kill someone in order to save your life? So on the simplest level, you can say it's because chumra savera. Murder is so bad that you can never do it even to save your own life. And we have to understand this. We have to really understand what we're talking about here, because we know when it comes to all other mitzvos, we have v'chai b'hem. V'chai b'hem v'lo yimus b'hem. That the mitzvos are given to us that we should live by them and not die by them. So the question is, why doesn't this apply to murder? Why doesn't it apply to Arise? Why does it apply to Avodah Zarah? We're not going to really focus on those two. But specifically, we're going to focus on murder. Why doesn't Hashem allow us to murder someone else to save our own life? If our life is so special and so significant and so holy, then why is it different than everything else? You can violate Shabbat to save your own life. You could do every other. We give a whole shiur on stealing to save your own life. And according to the halacha, you're allowed to steal to save your own life. So why is Ritzicha different? So it's a question which everyone really is thinking about, and the Rishonim are dealing with it, the Achronim are dealing with it. So one option is that there's a Masorah Halacha L'Moshe Mishinai. So the Kesef Mishnah, when trying to understand the Rambam Shita, which we're going to get to down the line when it comes to Reish Lakish, when it comes to a different case, but he's trying to understand why does the Rambam think that you're never allowed to murder someone ever in order to kill someone, and he thinks that it's just a Masorah, it's Halacha L'Moshe Mishinai. So what's the svar of this, though? Well, why aren't you allowed to do it? So the Ramban and the Ran think that the reason is because Ritzicha, and really all of the big three, but the Ritzicha is one of the Aviras Chamuros. It's such a terrible sin, it's such a terrible Avira, and the Rambam most probably holds this as well. Therefore, you're just never allowed to do it. To quote you the Mechamas Hashem, the Ramban, he says, It's not because Kiddush Hashem, it's not because of any other things, it's because these are so chamor. Right? Therefore, you're never allowed to do it. And Muki Yosef in Pesachim Dechav Hei says that the basic logic is that when it comes to all of their mitzvos in the bigger picture, it's better that you violate them and live a life of mitzvos than to give up your life and not violate them. So, you know, Chol Shabbos, Achas Kiddush more Shabbos Os Harbe. Violate one Shabbos in order that you fulfill many more. And we gave a whole shiur on this, whether it's only about Shabbos, but the point is that it's about the bigger picture. Do one small thing here that's wrong, and in the bigger picture, do many greater things. So the question becomes, what about murder? So the svar would be that in the bigger picture, it's much worse to have committed murder and then continue living a life of mitzvos than to die right now and not violate it. And not have done this affair. Meaning better to die right now not having violated than to live your whole life having violated it. So that's one approach. Basically, the first approach is that it's that's why it's different. But why? What's the difference? So you can say it's just a chok, it's just a gzeira, it's not gzeira, but it's just something that Hashem said. The second approach is more misfar, logical, saying that's just so bad. And the third approach is from the Chanda Shlomo, which is that Ritzicha is really learned out from Arise, meaning really you should be able to violate, should be able to murder someone in order to save your life. And therefore, we're going to say why, because we're going to get to in a minute about why you should be able to. Because V'chaivim knocks it out. So why is it different? Because Arise is about Chumras Havir. Arise isn't about anything else. Arise is so bad you're not allowed to do it. But what about, what's the connection between Arayas and Ritzicha? So the Gemara just before brought a Hekesh connecting Arayas and Ritzicha. And therefore, just like by Arayas, it's a dance about Chumus Avera, therefore so too by Ritzicha, it's about Chumus Avera, and therefore no matter what, you're not allowed to do it. There are questions on this, because if you look at that Gemara carefully, we learned out Arayas, the fact that Arayas is Yaragval Yavor from Ritzicha. So what do you mean you're learning from Arayas to Ritzicha? We learned the whole Arayas din from Ritzicha. So you could say that once you learn it out, meaning once we connect Arayas to Ritzicha, we connect Ritzicha back to Arayas. Meaning once they're learned out, once they're connected, you can kind of switch over stuff. And the question really becomes, how much? Like, to what extent? How is this going to work? What determines which genium remain, like unique to Arayas, unique to Ritzicha, and which ones are passed over? How do you filter? How do you say, stop? Where's the limits? But that's really, it's an interesting discussion. Because in general, we have so many concepts in Shas where when dinim are connected, dinim are passed over. And then the question becomes, okay, fine. But if once we're passing over dinim, why maybe Arayas should become a svar too? Why should Ritzicha be connected now to Arayas? Maybe Arayas should be connected now to Ritzicha, which determines which is the ikar in every case. As a matter of fact, the Chazon Ish himself thinks the whole din of Arayas is a svara, that violating someone, which he thinks that Arayas is not just Arayas, but it's only a case where someone violates another person against their will. And in such a case, the only reason why we're connecting Arayas to Ritzicha is because he thinks that in such a case, the violator is like a murderer, and therefore it has the same din as Ritzicha. So really, Arayas itself is kind of like misvara, like Ritzicha, as opposed to the other way around. You can go at this for a long time. We're not going to get so much into it, but the point is that it's possible to say that the reason why Ritzicha is a din chamor avera is because we can connect it to Arayas, which is like that. The second option is that the first option really is that Ritzicha is different. It's about the fact that it's about chamor avir. Either it itself is a chamor avir, or we learn that out from Arayas. Most probably, it itself is chamor avir. That's how most Rishonim understand it. The second option, though, is that this isn't about chamor avir. It's that you cannot play God. My chazus is a svara. It's a logical claim. What's the logical claim? Logical claim is that you are never allowed to play God and choose whose life to save, whose life is better, whose life to save over someone else. And we talked about this before, how it might be different when it comes to saving one over saving another, but you're not allowed to kill someone to save someone else because you can't choose whose life is better. So there are two different formulations of this. The first is Rashi. Rashi Rashi thinks that the avera itself actually remains, meaning that normally Hashem allows you to violate an avera in order to save a life. So v'chai behem comes and allows you to violate the avera, meaning the avera isn't being knocked out by v'chai behem. It's still there, but you can violate Shabbos to save your life. You can violate the issur of stealing in order to save your life. And what's the svara that Rashi says? He says it right in the daf. You can read it yourself afterwards. He says the goal of mitzvos is an opportunity to build yourself and your relationship with Hashem, to connect yourself. It doesn't say it explicitly, but that's the point. The point is that the goal of mitzvos is something there for you to build. And therefore, to save your life, Hashem allows you to violate the avera to save your life, because v'chai behem lo yemut behem. The purpose of mitzvos are there for you to live by them, to build your connection with Hashem, but not for you to die with them. So therefore what? Your life is much more valuable. Hashem allows you to violate the avera. It gets knocked out. Or it doesn't get knocked out, but you can violate it in order to save someone else. I mean, you can say either option. Either it gets knocked out, the avera gets knocked out so you can save your life, or it's still there, but you're allowed to violate to save your life. But what if someone's going to die? So you can't use v'chai behem there. Why can't you use it? Because you can't say that it's better that you kill this person and live than to die, because that's not the svara. As far as that's better, Hashem prefers life over mitzvot. So save your life over violating an avera. But you can't say Hashem prefers life over life, meaning you can't say that Hashem prefers your life over someone else's life, because we don't know whose life is better. So when it's life versus mitzvah, you can say that your life is better. When it's your life versus someone else's life, you can't say Hashem prefers your life. And therefore, the avir of Itzicha remains, and you have to give up your life rather than violate it. But Tosfos says that you don't have to say that, meaning that v'chai behem always knocks out Ritzicha. And Rashi is saying that no, Ritzicha remains here. There's a shame Ritzicha. Tosfos saying that no, you can actually say that it always gets knocked out. But what's the problem? The problem is that v'chai behem can't be used, because you can't decide your life is more valuable than someone else. In essence, meaning, the difference between Rashi and Tosfos is that Rashi thinks that the chai behem doesn't knock out the avira, and Tosfos thinks that it doesn't matter. Even if the avira gets knocked out, it's not about the avira anymore. It's all about the decision. Meaning that you are not allowed to decide that your life is more valuable than someone else's, and irrespective of whether or not there's an avera being violated. So Toso says that, and the Grach actually develops this a lot further, that the whole reason why you're not allowed to save someone to save someone else's life is because of logic, because of Sfar, because you can't play God. You can't say that my life is more valuable than your life, or someone else's life, in docha nefesh, mevin nefesh. You can't choose one life over another, irrespective of the avera. It's not about Ritzicha being so chamor. It's not about being so strict and that you can't violate. It's just the fact that when it comes to life, you can't choose one over another. And the Baal Mor actually says this too. He has a very unique shita, and we might discuss this down the line if we ever discuss the big three in more detail. But his shita is that when it comes to the big three, the avira gets knocked out because of v'chai behem, just like we said according to Tosfos. What's the problem? Why do you have to give up your life by the big three? Because there's a chiv of kiddush Hashem preventing chil Hashem. So, kiyum asay kiddush Hashem, esrei chil Hashem. There's debate whether you need both, only one's enough. But regardless, that's the aspect of the big three. And he holds that when the Gemara on Ayin Dal and Sanhedrin and Amabez, Ayin Dal and Amabez, says that it's mutter to violate in certain cases for Anas Atzman, he thinks the reason is because by Anas Atzman there's no Chil Hashem. Normally there's no Isser, but there's a Isser Chil Hashem, meaning there's no Isser of Gili Arias when it comes to Achashverosh and Esther, but there is an Isser of Chil Hashem, but if it's Anas Atzman, there's no Chil Hashem. So what about Ritzicha? So he says it doesn't work by Ritzicha. Even if it's Hanas Atzman, you still have to give up your life. But V'chai Behem knocks out the Adira. And there's no Isra of Chil Hashem Kiddush Hashem because it's Hanas Atzman. He says that it's still pure Svara. Meaning when it comes to Ritzicha, there's also the din of you can't play God. And his Lashon is that b'shvichas dam afal gav demechavin nachril anas atzmo ein sham derech liolam sheim utter the time b'shum svara demai chaz dam didachsam atzay de ha'isvara isi bechol inyan. right? Afilu shem skapia nachril anas, meaning anas atzman. Even if this anas atzman, there's still a problem of the svara. You're never allowed to choose one life over another, and that's the real difference between Rashi versus Tosfos Balmor. Is that Rashi thinks that my chazis creates an avira problem, meaning it doesn't knock out the avira, therefore you have a problem of violating Ritzicha. It's not that a Ritzicha is so chamor, it's just that because of the svara issue, because you can't say your life is more valuable, therefore the Ritzicha, the Isser Ritzicha remains, and therefore you can't violate it. Tosu says, no, my chaz can still knock out the avira. Either it knocks it out, or there's just no problem about it. It's not an avira issue, it's just a question of playing God. You are not allowed to choose who lives and who dies. And it's really, you know, separate from the avira issue. So now we get to another really interesting question, which is that I understand if it's chumras avira, if the avira of ritzicha, of murdering someone, is so terrible, they're just not allowed to do it, okay, fine. But if the whole issue is that you're not allowed to choose whose life is better, meaning that, you know, who says your life is better? You can't play God. You can't be around choosing, saying, my life is better than this person's life is better than that person. If that's really the issue, what if we could determine whose life is better? Meaning, maybe we could assess which person has more potential value, as in which will live longer, perform more mitzvos, or who. Perhaps we should assess people's current value and determine which one of the two is currently more of a tzaddik, more righteous. You know, there's so many possible ways of assessing who's more valuable, who's not. So why can't we assess? Why can't we assess? So one option is that it's just practically impossible to assess whose life is more valuable. Meaning, you know, ideally you would be able to measure the respective values of one person over another person, but you're just not able to. And there are a few possible explanations as to what exactly the practical hindrance is, each of which, you know, has a different assumption for which quality would allow you to conclude that one life is more valuable than another. So, for example, the first option was the Ramah. The Ad Ramah quotes here in Sanhedrin is that he assumes the value of a person's life is determined by the amount of time that he or she has left to live. So, accordingly, the person with more years left on this earth will be deemed to have the more valuable life. However, in our inability to determine a human lifespan would lead us to just a practical inability to judge whose life is more valuable, whose blood is redder. And therefore you wouldn't be allowed to kill one person to save your own life, because you don't know, perhaps he'll live longer than you. And you can even say, oh, what if you're young and he's old? No, perhaps an elderly woman will live a few years longer than, you know, a young man, and who might die within the month, within the year. You just don't know. Oh, what about Rove? So that would be the Chiddush, that you can't rely on Rove, that you're just not allowed to kill one person, save another, even if you would assume that the one person would live longer than the other person. And the Rama's second option is the same logic, but just regarding mitzvos. That you might say that maybe the person who's going to perform the most mitzvos in the future has the most value, and that person will be the, you know, more valuable in Hashem's eyes, you should save that person. So if you're a bigger tzaddik, you can say, oh, I can save my own life to, you know, at the expense of this other person's life, I can kill him because I'm going to have more mitzvahs. I'm going to be a bigger tzaddik. But the same logic is that, okay, maybe you're a tzaddik now, but you're going to die within a couple hours, and this person may have strayed off the, you know, off the path, but he might made the tshuva, may live a full life of observance. You just don't know. And you can't know. And therefore, you can't use Chazaki, you can't use a rove, you can't use those principles, and you have to say, you just, you know, my chazas. You don't know whose blood is going to be redder, you don't know who's going to live a longer life, you don't know who's more valuable. And while the first two approaches were based on potential and based on the future, you can even say that there's another way of judging a person, which is based on their present status of tzitkos, who's the bigger tzaddik now. And you can see whoever's the bigger tzaddik, that person has a greater right to live. But of course, you have to understand that this doesn't work. Why? Because you have to understand what the term tzaddik means. A tzaddik doesn't refer to someone who does great things. It refers to someone who is objectively fulfilling his or her unique potential, unique purpose in this world. And therefore, you can never know who's a bigger tzaddik, because each person is born with a unique set of biological, social, and spiritual qualities, and each of us, like, has this unique starting point where we are put in this world, and each person in their own subjective reality has to overcome their challenges and fulfill their unique purpose. But it could be that one person's being a tzaddik is knowing Kol Torah Kula and knowing Shas Bal Peh. The other person's tzidkus could be learning the Daf a Day. Another person's tzidkus could just be being Shomer Shabbos. You just don't know what your challenges, what your purpose is relative to other people, and therefore you can never know. On the outside, one person can be learning a tremendous amount, doing tremendous things, and inside, he knows that he's only fulfilling a little bit of his potential or her potential. Another person could be doing so much less on the outside, but fulfilling all of his or her potential. And you'd think one person's a tzaddik, one person's a nebuch, one person's not doing anything, but it's just not true. And therefore, you can't ever know who's a bigger tzaddik. And just a beautiful Mr. Haskell, in terms of you see all these people around you who are doing all these great things, and you have to understand that you're never fighting a competitive battle. It's always about who are you meant to be, who are you meant to become. And in a deeper perspective, we're all on the same team. You're not competing against anyone else. We're all meant to fulfill our unique purpose. We're all meant to become tzaddikim. And this is really the explanation behind the Rambam, who says that everyone can be a tzaddik like Moshe Rabbeinu. Famous question that Rechana Washington asks is that, how is that possible? It's not true. Moshe Rabbeinu was the greatest person who ever lived. He had the highest level of nevuah of any human being possible. Received the Torah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Dibur Mitoch Gronon Shel Moshe, Hashem spoke literally through the throat of Moshe Rabbeinu. How can we be like Moshe? The answer is that we can all fulfill our potential just like Moshe did. Not be the same in terms of objectively, but to be the same in terms of subjectively, taking our unique talents and gifts and maximizing them and becoming the best that we can be. So that's really the first category, is that practically it's impossible to assess who's on a greater level. There's a fundamental perspective, which is that it's not that practically you don't know whose life is more valuable, but objectively everyone's life is of equal value. It's not that one person is of more value. If we could determine that, we would. It's that, no, Hashem created all people equal. And in His eyes, we all remain equal regardless of what's going on in this world. You're not judged based on past or future actions, but you always retain your infinite, innate value of Achilik al-Kamal, Selim al-Kim. And you can even take it a step further, which is that even if we thought the human value was determined based on the amount of future time a person possesses, each moment of time is of infinite value. And therefore, 1 minute and 1 year are each of infinite value, and would therefore be of equal value. Now, you can easily question this, and we have, and we both will, in terms of Chai Shon and Chai Olam, and how there are, first of all, different levels, different types of infinities, and these are referred to as cardinalities. But without getting into the mathematics of it, you can just break down the basic construct and say that's not true, and that not everything is of infinite value, and you can also say that even if it is of infinite value, there are different levels of infinities. And we're not going to get into Zeno's paradox, but that was his basic paradox, is that once you realize this concept, everything kind of breaks down. Once you understand that, we're not going to really get into this stuff now. But here's a basic nafkamina, which is very interesting. What if you know that one of them is in fact better? Meaning, just to give you an example, if you don't know, then you can't choose. But let's say you do know. So if, according to the first one, if it's basically a practical problem that we just don't know who's better, then if you do know, you could choose. But if you're saying, no, it's not that one's better and we just don't know who's better, but that, no, all people are objectively equal, like we just said, either because all have the Tzelem Elokim or because all time is of infinite value. So it would be irrelevant if you think you knew which one was better, because that's not the point. And it's also interesting, there's a question that the Achronim bring up. Can you choose to give up your own life in order to save someone else's? So not choosing to kill someone and save your own life, but give up your own life to save someone else. So if you think Maichazus requires you to always be Shev al Taseh, meaning it's like Tosfos, who says you can't choose, so then no, you're never allowed to give up your own life. If you think that Maichazus, it's not that you're not allowed to choose, but that you're not allowed to choose your life over someone else's life, meaning you can't say, my life is more valuable, maybe then you can choose. But if you think that it's this kind of universal concept that it's not about you choosing, but it's about just objectively, you can never say that one life should be sacrificed or given up or saved at the expense of someone else's, then it doesn't matter. Now, there is an interesting shita, it's an extreme shita, but it says that it depends on whether or not the other person's a tzaddik and clearly better than you. So the Yaivetz, he actually is quoting in regards to Rabbi Kiva ben Petura's case that we recently did. He says, you can give up your life. Now, he's not talking about suicide, he's not talking about like actively killing yourself, he's talking about kind of creating a situation where you're going to die. But he says, you can give up your life. He can, in the case of Rabbi Kiva, you can give the water to the other person. If he's a Talmud Chacham, meaning in essence, if you're in the desert and you only have one flask of water, whoever drinks it will survive. If it's your flask of water, you can give it to the Talmud Chacham and save the Talmud Chacham's life, even though you're going to die. He says, So he actually extends it not only to Talmud Chacham, but to your Rebbe or to your father. You can save your Rebbe, your father, or Talmud Chacham to save your own life. It's extreme shita, it's a chiddush. And there's definitely a lot of reason to question that and to say that might not be true. So let's just build a couple layers. We're just going to build a couple more layers to this. And then next year, we're going to extend into really the next topic, which is not only the question of killing to save someone else's life, killing to save your own life, but what about killing one to save the lives of the many, which is really the topic of the trolley problem, the topic of self-driving cars. And then we're going to extend further into some really fascinating aspects of this topic. So, but before we do, let's just build a couple more layers. So the question, one of the questions that people have is, how can you say that Ritzicha is really a din of Chumras Avira? That it's about being so bad. The Gemara doesn't say that. The Gemara says, my Chazas. The Gemara says, my Gemar. Meaning, the Gemara says, how can you say that your blood's red or his blood's red? That sounds like it's more of a Svara. More of a logic. So how can you say that? No, forget the logic of who says who his blood's redder, maybe your blood's redder, and it really is a din of Chumras Avira. But the Gemara mentioned the logic, didn't say it's about Ritzicha being so bad. So the Kesef Mishnah says that it's true, but the Gemara is just giving a nice explanation. But the underlying principle is Chumras Avira. And this really, we're not going to discuss this too much now, but this is an age-old debate on how to learn Gemara. Is Gemara meant to be taken literally and practically, as you mean being medayik exactly in the words themselves? Or is Torah Shebal Peh a conceptual beyond the actual physical words? And the written Torah Shebal Peh in the Gemara is meant to be kind of like a gateway or a springboard into the more conceptual thing. So Tosfos will take the words, the literal words of Gemara, much less literally, and we'll try to make it more conceptual to match up and create sort of a parallel construct across all of Shas, to make all of Shas fit. And Rashi will work with the words themselves and to, you know, fit it in much more al hadaf. And that's why you have so many stiras in Rashi across Shas. The Masorah of Rav Chaim is that the reason why you have so many stiras in Rashi, because Rashi isn't trying to give you his shita. He has a bunch of shittos from his Rebbeim, and he has, let's say, well, you know, kind of the spectrum, and he will choose which shita best fits into the words. And there are tons of examples which I can give to you. One of them actually is a very relevant case. We're not going to get into it now. But the Kesef Mishnah is basically saying, like, yes, the words say Mechazas, and the Svar is great, but that's not really the principle. The principle is Chumras HaAvira. And another possibility, which is really based on the Chacham Shlomo that we mentioned a little earlier, is that true? Fundamentally, Ritzicha is din Maichazas, is a Svara, but the Hekesh to Arayas is what creates the din Chumras HaAvira. Meaning, Maker din Ritzicha is about Maichazas, about Svara, it's about logic, you can't play God. But once we connect it to Arayas, to which is a Chumras HaAvira, now it no longer is a din Svara, now it becomes a din in Chumras HaAvira. So, just some interesting nafkaminas is, can you kill a fetus or a trefa in order to save your life? So, if you remember when we talked about abortion, there's a whole question, is a fetus considered to be a nefesh? Is it a partial nefesh, a full nefesh, not a nefesh at all? Is it ritzicha to kill a fetus? So, if you assume that either a fetus is a full-fledged life, or almost a full-fledged life in the sense that it is ritzicha to kill it, or... meaning, you'd have to say that it's not a full-fledged ritzicha because you're not chayav misa for killing a fetus or for killing a trefa. So trefa, you can say that it's not ritzicha at all, since the trefa is someone who has a wound. I mean, it's really when it comes to kashrus, a trefa is an animal that has a hole in its lung. It's not going to live more than a year. That's the basic definition that people give. So the question becomes, okay, fine, you're not chaimisa for killing a chayif, you're not chaimisa for killing a fetus, but is it ritzicha? So if you think it is ritzicha, then here's the question. If it's a chumras avera, if it's because murder is so terrible, then if it's not ritzicha, it should be mutter. Even if it is ritzicha, then you could say maybe it's not a chumras avera form of ritzicha. It's not such a chamor version of ritzicha, so you wouldn't be able to do it. Although you could say, no, once it has a shame ritzicha, once it's murder, you cannot do it. If it's about my chazas, then whether it's a din ritzicha or not, remember, Tosfos says it doesn't really matter. If you're going through Rashi, it might be an issue. But according to Tosfos, who says that's all about spars, all about logic, it's all about you can't choose one life or another, this is a really interesting one, because some of the Achronim really say that you can say that your life is better, that your blood is rather, that you are more valuable. Now, there are Achronim that see this explicitly, and if you remember, I think we might have mentioned it by the abortion, so yeah, if we didn't mention that, Shira, let's mention it now, that some of the Achronim, and they say this explicitly, you can actually say that your life is more valuable. But one second, this doesn't fit if you think that the svar of my chazis is a principle that always applies because everyone's of objective equal value. This seems to say that if we would have known that people are, like, one person's more valuable, then you could choose one life over another. And I would say that there is a possible way to really defend the other approach and say, no. When you're a full-fledged human being, once you're born, then everyone has equal value. Until then you can go with the other one. That no, it's not true, that not everyone has equal value, and that's why the Gemara says specifically in Olos, I mean, the Mishnah says in Olos, the Gemara says in Sanhedrin, that fine base, that you are allowed to sacrifice the fetus to save the mother. It's a whole sugya. Some shittos say it's about rodef, some shittos say it's a different cheshbon, but and that the fetus isn't a nefesh. But according to the shita that says that the fetus is somewhat of a nefesh, at least somewhat of a nefesh, one option is that the mother is more of a nefesh, and therefore you can save the mother, you can sacrifice the fetus to save the mother. That's obviously a very, very complex topic. We're not going to get into that too much, although we'll mention that sugi in just a second. And the Minchas Chinuch and the Chazanish, they explicitly that you are allowed to kill the fetus to save your life, and the svara would be exactly that your life, usually you can't say mechazas, but in this case, your life actually is more valuable. And there's also a very interesting nafkamina, can you kill someone to prevent yourself from being tortured? So what's the even nafkamina? So if you think that the reason why you can't murder someone is because of chumros ha'avira, so you could argue that no, you're not allowed to kill someone in order to prevent torture. Why? Because, you know, it's why would you? It's chumras avira. But if you think it's because of my chazis, then there is reason to say, and to be honest with you, it even goes back to, you know, you can even say chumras avira. Is torture worse than dying? Can you really make this a logical argument that say that better that I kill you than I be tortured? Is that a real good logical argument? Can you say that my chazus doesn't apply here and I'm allowed to kill you in order to prevent myself from being tortured? So you could argue no, or you could argue, like a very fascinating Shita Mikubetzas, on Ksubas Daflaf Gimel Mabez, which we'll get to when we talk about suicide, which says that torture, it's talking about Avodah Zarah, and it might be specific to Avodah Zarah, but if you apply it in general, it says that the source for the reason why you're not allowed to commit Avodah Zarah in order to save your own life is because b'chol levavchem b'chol nafshechem. They should, you know, serve Hashem with your entire soul. But he says b'chol nafshechem, with my whole life, with my whole, you know, essence, but it doesn't say that I have to also get tortured. And therefore, Shiji Mikubetza says that you have to give up your life to prevent yourself from violating Avodah Zarah, but you don't have to experience torture. And therefore, you're allowed to violate Avodah Zarah in order to prevent torture. So if you think that's not just a din in Avodah Zarah, but a din in all the big three, and you think that torture is worse than murder, and you think that torture is worse than anything, then you could argue that you are allowed to kill someone to prevent torture, and you might even be able to apply this to Chumras Avira, that the Chumras Avira is only in terms of, you know, you should be killed versus killing. But when it comes to torture, you could even argue that perhaps even that's overridden. It's obviously a very unique shita of the Shitim Gubatzas. It's a big chiddush that he has. Shitim Gubatzas is really a compilation of different shitos. And I can get you exactly which shita the Shitim Gubatzas is quoting. That's a very fascinating shita. And just to mention a couple more things before we finish, the Gemara brings another case, which is not a question of whether you can kill someone to save your own life, but whether you can kill someone to save someone else's life. So the Gemara is really quoting the Mishnah Olos and bringing its own case. It says that if a woman's pregnant, you are allowed to kill the fetus to save the mother. Now, why you're allowed to do that, we discussed in our very first year, whether it's because the fetus is not a life and the mother is life, whether the fetus is not a full life and the mother is a full life, whether the fetus has a unique relationship with the mother because the mother is really the source of the fetus's life, at least when it's still dependent on the mother, or it's because the fetus is a rodef, and therefore you can kill, say, the mother, but it doesn't have intent, and now the mother is also a rodef, so you can argue that even if you think the fetus is somewhat of life, it's not a full life yet, and that's why you're not chai misa if you kill it, and therefore either only the fetus is a rodef, or you can say that they're both a rodef, and the mother is able to kill to save her own life. We talked a lot about this, I don't want to get you guys too confused, but in essence, the Rav Moshe Feinstein has a big chiddush. They says that really they're both a rodef, but since the mother is a full nefesh and the fetus is not a full nefesh, the full rodef, because the fetus is a rodef after a full nefesh, is kind of it's kind of bottle. It kind of knocks out the tafel rodef, meaning the ikar rodef is the fetus is trying to kill the mother who's a full life, the mother trying to kill the fetus who's not a full life. Therefore, at the end of the day, we kind of just are mevatel the mother's redifa after the fetus, and the fetus becomes the only rodef, and therefore you can kill the fetus. If I lost you, if that was too complicated, forget it. It's really okay. But the question I just want to really bring out is that the Gemara says, once the fetus head comes out, you're not allowed to kill the fetus or the mother, and the lashon Gemara is, lefisha ein docha nefesh mipnei nefesh. So the question is, why not? And once again, you can really just apply both of our principles, either because chumos avira, now that the fetus is a full nefesh, either the head came out or most of his body came out, you're not allowed to murder one person to save another. Or you can say that this far is my chazas, that you can't choose. I mean, we don't know whose life, we don't know who's better, we don't know who's going to live longer, who's going to perform a mitzvah, who's a bigger tzaddik, or maybe everyone's equal, maybe every moment of life is of infinite value. Everything we just said, you can just apply it here. And just two more things. One is that if this is only that you'd be chayev misa for murder, and therefore murder is such a chumras avira, what about a unique case? What if we're going to downplay the chumras avira? Meaning, what about a retzicha, a case where you wouldn't be chayev misa for the murder? Retzicha begrama. Or you can come up with a bunch of cases where the onesh is not going to be there. You have the maisa retzicha, and you can argue, there's a whole machlokas when it comes to things begrama, is there still a maisa there? For example, retzicha beones. Does the ones knock out the maisa? Does the ones knock out the onesh? Does the ones knock out the avera? Well, what is the ones knocking out? What is the grama knocking out? What's being affected here? You can ask all these questions. They're all very good questions. But let's say we can downplay either the onesh or the maisa avera or the chumras avera. We can just downplay some aspect of it. So you're still deciding. Right, you're still deciding. So what can you say? If you think it's all about my chazas, you're still deciding to choose one life over another. It's still a problem. Remember, the my chazas issue, the logical issue, the you can't play God issue, has nothing to do with the avira according to Tosos. According to Rashi, it does. But according to Tosos, and according to the Baal Mor, it doesn't. So in this case, you're still deciding. It's still a problem. But if you think that it's about chumras avira, so you could say that maybe this isn't so chamor. For example, when it comes to Ritzicha Begrama. So Grama it's not as direct. And you can come up with a bunch of cases. You tie someone down and then the lion comes and eats him. Or you can come up with a bunch of cases where you do one thing and another force comes. There's a time delay. Another force acts upon him. You're not doing the actual Maisa Ritzicha physically directly. So you can say that it might be Mutter, since there's no real terrible Maisa Ritzicha. But you can also say that maybe the chumras avira is about the result, more about the result that someone else is dying because of you, and therefore it's not about the technical being mechayiv misa, or even the fundamental being Chaim, he said it's more about being in that category of taking life and being responsible for the death of another person. And just to end off today's shiur, there's a very interesting proof that you can bring that potentially would be a proof that Ritzicha is, in fact, a Chumras HaAvira question and not a question of my chazos of Svara, of playing God. Why? Because the Gemara, we actually mentioned this back when we talked about in Shir 7a, I think, when we talked about stealing to save your life, we brought down the famous Gemara, the Gemara in Sota. It's also Gemara in Bab Metzia, Daf Nun Tes Amud Aleph. It's a Gemara in Sota we did in Yud Amud Beis. It says, "Noachol Adam she epil atzmo toch kivshon eish ve'al yalvin pnei chaver barab minolam mitamer." So the Gemara says that better that you jump into a kivshon eish and basically give up your life, rather than embarrass her in public. We learn that from Tamar, who was willing to give up her life and die rather than embarrass Yehuda and tell everyone that Yehuda had been with her inappropriately or appropriately. It's a whole interesting topic, which we didn't really do in that much stuff last time. It's really, it's a fascinating question as to what exactly was going on and what did Yehuda do. Was he wrong? Was he not wrong? We're not going to really get into that right now. But the point is that Tamar was willing to give up her life in order to protect Yehuda and protect his reputation, not embarrass him in public. So it seems to be like very strange what's going on here. Like, why do you have to give up your life rather than embarrass someone in public? It's not one of the big three. The big three is murder, avodah zarah, and arayas. And embarrassing someone in public might be bad. And as a matter of fact, the Gemara says in Bab Mansiya, Daf Nun Chasam Beis, says kol hamalpim pnei chaver baradim ki ilu shofech damim. It says anyone who embarrasses someone in public, it's like he killed them. It's like he spilled his blood. So what's going on here? Is it really murder? Is it not murder? What's going on? So the Meiri in Sota Daf Yom Beis, he really just says that this is really all just a bunch of mussar. He says Derech Ara Amru. They're just really, it's not really saying, you can argue the Meiri is either saying that it's Lefnim Yishur Sadin, or you can say that he's saying it's really just a bunch of mussar. Not in a bad way, not downplaying this, but saying that, like, it's showing you how bad embarrassing someone in public is, but it's not saying they actually have to give up your life for it. Another option is Tosfos. Tosfos says that really we have the big three, but we also have more than the big three. The big three are only those that have psukim. Because if you look in the Gemara always brings down, especially in the Gemara which is did, Ayin Dal and Aleph, it brings down sources in psukim in the Torah that teach you that the big three is Yahweh Yavar, you have to give up your life. And the you can even say that, but it only brings sources for Avodah Zarah and Gilui Arayos. Where you see for Ritzicha, so that's back to Archan Shlomo, that there was a hekesh between Ritzicha and Gilui Arayos. So that's for the Tosfos answer. He says that there's really more than just the big three. The big three are just the ones that have psukim, but there's really more. And the Gemara is saying that this is also one of the, you know, quote unquote big three. We really have the big four. And he says the Mishum the Averis Halan's Panam Eno Mufureshes Batorah V'lo Nakat Ela Averis Mufureshes. The big three are only those that have explicit sources in the Torah that teach you that it's one of the big three that it's Yahag Vayavor. But embarrassing someone in public doesn't have that source. But the concept is the same, and therefore it's really should be included in the list. And we offered a suggestion when doing the shir on whether you're allowed to steal to save your life. And according to the sheet that says you're not allowed to steal to save your life, and it's not one of the big three, you can make the same argument that it's the same conceptual, it fits into the conceptual categorization, but there's no specific source, and that's why it wasn't included. But then you have Rabbeinu Yonah. Rabbeinu Yonah says that no, the reason why you have to, the Gemara says, because you actually have to give up your life rather than embarrass on public. And why does he say? He actually says, no, it's not the Gemara which said, the Gemara in Bab Metzia says, Kol ha'mal p'nei chaver b'rabim kil shofech damim. That was real. And he says, the reason why is because it's embarrassing someone in public, v'doma el haratzicha. That's what his lashon. He says, it's similar to tzicha. He says, ki tzar halvana mar mimavas. Right? The pain of the whiteness of his face when the blood drains from his face, it's as bitter as death. So he's basically saying that this is serious, and we're not downplaying it. It's an avazra v'tzicha, the pain, the physical pain, the existential pain, whatever it is. So now here's the question. The question is, if you think that it's chumras avir, okay, that's great. You know, you did something that's so terrible, and that's why it's included in the category of v'tzicha, and that's why you have to give up your life rather than do it. But my chassis doesn't really seem to apply here. It's not you versus him. It's not how can you play God and save your life over him. He's going to live and you're going to live either way. Even if you embarrass him, he's going to continue to live his life. And you can argue, oh, he'll commit suicide. That's a nice argument, but it's not really a good argument because you're acting to kill him, and the suicide will happen at a different point in time in the future. If it's about my chazis, this doesn't really make sense. But Chumras Avera seems to be a perfect fit. So you can reject this, though, because you can say, no, no, this is murder. It may even be worse than murder, because there's two forms of murder. One is murdering someone to save your own life, but you're physically killing him, and his neshama leaves his body. But the other is character assassination, identity murder, where his whole life is ruined. He's never going to be able to walk his streets again. You've murdered his identity, his inner world. You've destroyed him. And in a deep sense, you could actually apply the svara of my chazak, who says your life is better, that you should continue going on, than his life, who you're now going to have destroyed. And yes, it's more conceptual, but the same logic applies. So in essence, we really so far built the framework that we're going to be working with, which is that number one, you're not allowed to murder someone. Number two, you're not allowed to murder someone to save your own life. And whether it's about logic, whether it's about Chumras Avera, and within the realm of logic, that because we don't know whose life is more valuable, whether that's a real, like if we did know whose life was more valuable, you would be able to, or no, everyone always has equal value and therefore you're never able to. That's really what we laid down here. We try to bring some proofs, bring some questions, some nafkaminas. But next year, we're going to take this next step, because what about sacrificing one life to save the many? As opposed to one-to-one, where we had all these questions of Chumras Avera and the svar of my logic, of my chazas and the logic of my chazas, does the same din, does the same cheshbon, the same calculation, does it apply when it comes to the case of sacrificing one to save the many? Would it perhaps be different when it comes to the lives of many? Would that override Chumras Avera? Would that override my chazas? Would that override all of these other calculations? That really is the case of the trolley case, self-driving cars. So we're going to hopefully get back to that in the future. And I wish everyone an incredible week. And I cannot wait to continue this series.